Thank you so much to our choir members for helping out on that. In a way, it's not fair for me to pick a Sunday when there's such a small group of people here for a hymn that's a little more difficult, but you'll see why I did that in a minute. One weekend earlier this month, Michelle and I found ourselves idly bouncing through the TV channels at the upper regions of the cable lineup, which we almost never do, and this is a part of the cable lineup we almost never explore, and we caught up with The Caine Mutiny, a black and white Humphrey Bogart movie from 1954 that I hadn't seen in ages and that Michelle had never seen. So this movie has a memorable cast of supporting characters, for those of you who haven't seen it, and it's adapted from a really gripping Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Herman Woke, who died this month at the age of 103. I first read that novel as a teenager, and it made a big impression on me. The plot turns on the mental instability of the Caine's commander, Philip Queig, who was played by Bogart. And no, I'm not bringing this up to suggest a connection with the ongoing debate about President Trump's mental condition. The Caine Mutiny is a World War II story and setting, but the real subject of the film and the book is how truth is elusive and how the conscientious pursuit of justice can have impacts that are unfair and destructive. And I bring all of this up for an unrelated reason. As the movie ends, we see the Caine steaming west from San Francisco under the Golden Gate Bridge, returning to the war in the Pacific after the court-martial trial in San Francisco. The new commander gives the honor of setting the ship's course to Ensign Willie Keith, the youngest officer to have endured the emotional havoc of the mutiny. And I found myself tearing up as I watched this ship steaming west. The fictional USS Caine is a destroyer minesweeper, a ship only slightly smaller than the USS Shannon, the destroyer mine layer on which my then 21-year-old father went to war in the Pacific in late 1944. He was a junior lieutenant fresh out of the ROTC training program at the University of North Carolina. He was skinnier and even younger looking than Ensign Keith, the movie's symbol of youthful innocence. And I told Michelle as the Caine approached the Golden Gate, it must have looked just like that when the Shannon first sailed west from San Francisco. Not literally like that, of course. The real world happens in color, which is glorious in the case of the Golden Gate, not black and white like the movie. Moreover, when I looked up the log of the Shannon's travels that I have in my files, it turns out that the ship's home port was that huge naval base in San Diego, not the one in San Francisco Bay. The Shannon never steamed under the famous bridge that I grew up loving in the Bay Area. But anything like the scene that I imagined for Dad is a true story in the larger sense. Any story that pulls you into a space where Memorial Day kind of dings something deep inside of you is a true story spiritually. Memorial Day celebrates patriotism, but it is more spiritual than that. And that's why every year on this weekend, I actually do a Memorial Day service when a lot of churches are busy ignoring it because the official holiday is tomorrow. Memorial Day lives in an ocean of loyalties in which we swim. Loyalty to ourselves, to our families and neighbors, to protecting homelands and familiar customs, and sometimes even to saving oppressed fellow human beings. Even politicians know they must speak of these loyalties as a form of love. Memorial Day speeches are never about the darker side of patriotism, about the young men who go off to war because they feel they have no choice economically or socially, or because they've been duped into trumped-up lies about, quote, the other side. No, Memorial Day speeches always speak of our fallen combatants' love of family, country, and freedom. As the poet Archibald MacLeish puts it, dead warriors, if they could speak, would say, our deaths are not ours, they are yours. They will mean what you make them. That's also true to some extent about the sacrifices of those like my father who happened not to die, but saw a lot of men who did. Maybe they can cope with making some meaning of what they saw, like my father and most veterans appear to do. But many of them who saw death face to face don't want to talk about it because there's always more to it than they can put in words. My reaction to the old movement made me wonder about the countless ways that we absorb the damage of war. We are wounded, if we are paying attention, by combatants sharing what they encountered or by their not sharing. Consciously or not, we absorb how they model remembering or suppressing loss and pain. There doesn't seem to be a predictable formula about how all this plays out, but it's there inside of us. And sometimes we react badly, sometimes we overreact. I fear that this damage is accumulating through the centuries of human existence and ever more expansive wars, like a toxin in the food chain. Maybe that accumulating poison explains, among other things, how we could go to war with our very planet, crazily blasting away at its resources and ecological balances, with lifestyles guaranteed to decimate our children's prospects of peace and prosperity. Maybe that's the accumulated toxin of so much war. Our call to worship today began with the proclamation that this house is for the ingathering of nature and human nature. But simply gathering here together to remember doesn't make meaning of lives sacrificed in war. Not if we are not also prepared to be honest about who we are and what our behavior says about what we really worship. And so, as we said further on in that call to worship, we've come to a house of truth-seeking, bringing together scientists and mystics, a community of searchers. And so we end up in that call to worship proclaiming that CVUUS is a cradle for our dreams and a workshop of our common endeavor. Well, at least that's our goal. There is wisdom in that. Our dreams are the morning stars rising of the hymn we are. They belong to the child in each of us, so we know that they need to be cradled. But we also embody, as the hymn says, our ancestors' dreams and prayers. And the best of those dreams and prayers, the parts that reflect what the hymn calls the Spirit of God, need sanctuary among the cradles. The author of that hymn and many other songs opposing oppression is Yusaya Barnwell, a 73-year-old African-American woman who lives in Washington, D.C. She's a powerful advocate for group singing as a way of forming empowered communities of diverse people. Before her long tenure as in the famous female singing group Sweet Honey in the Rock, Dr. Barnwell, and she is a PhD in speech pathology, Dr. Barnwell was, among other things, a founder of the gospel choir at All Souls Unitarian in Washington, D.C. I chose her hymn as a reading today as a heads up for all of you. The voices of people who have come into your life from the margins of society are frequently the most challenging, profound spiritual guides you'll ever encounter. Dr. Barnwell often ministers to the world through singing workshops, just as our call to worship reminds us that we are a workshop of our common endeavors. There's such a small distance between workshop and worship when your goal is doing something that makes love effective in the world. This all relates to Memorial Day because to honor those who risked and sometimes gave their lives in combat, we must use our present freedoms to make this space an enduring home for compassionate, free thinkers. Our theme this month is freedom, and no freedom is more precious than free thinking. The freedom to unleash our minds in a community like CVUUS is a priceless blessing. Countering the accumulated ravages of war requires increasing freedom from many things, things as basic as hunger and as deadly as despair. Now, each of you came here today with things you need freedom from. I don't ask for amens very often, but I'm going to ask for one for that. I know that's true. Countering the ravages also requires freedom to and freedom for. Freedom for truth-telling, art-making, and so much else. You all came needing those freedoms too. And I especially want to lift up the freedom for play. Please note your free thinker's play space on the back of your order of service. It's there every week, inviting you to let your mind wander from what you are seeing or hearing. More broadly, though, CVUUS must be a space for all the things that UU freethinkers do, not just for exploration. After all, we are also, if we answer Dr. Barnwell's hopeful affirmation, nation builders, and we're truth seekers, and we are peacemakers. These are all endeavors that we can nurture within these walls, but they cannot be completed within these walls. Maybe they can't be completed at all. Perhaps the immensity of such challenges is proof that their pursuit is worthy of what Thomas Jefferson chose to call in the closing words of the Declaration of Independence, our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. In closing, I want to turn to another song that many of you probably have heard, probably have not heard in a while, if you ever heard it in the brief moment when it was popular everywhere. And we'll see how I do with our technology. It's not working for the ad, which is great. I'm skipping the ad. Let's see if we get some sound now. X1, Shannon. Yeah. All right. And definitely going to be worth it when I get there. On. Well, the song, which I will try and play later if I can't play it here, is Milk's song, Quiet. How many of you remember it? It was the theme song. It became the theme song for the Women's March in Washington in 2017. Might have been the theme song in 1917 if it had been written then. And I'm really frustrated why this isn't showing up. I'm going to do one other thing while I'm talking. I'm going to go back to YouTube. And I'm going to put on another version of Milk and see if it comes up on that one. Well, it's not getting any volume, so that's the problem. And I'm not quite sure. Anyway, the song arose from the private agony of a young woman named Connie Lim, who had suffered through domestic violence. Was that it? All right, we're going to give it one more try here. It's fittingly called quiet, isn't it?
Do you unplug the wire from your phone or through the phone?
That's a good thought. Let's see. Here we go. It's playing through the phone. Try it once more here. You getting anything? All right.
Put on your face. Know your place. Shut up and smile. Don't spread your legs. I could do that, but no one knows me. No one ever will. If I don't say something, if I just lost it, would I be that monster? Scare them all away. If I let them hear all I have to say, I can't keep quiet.
So the backstory about how this song came to have such an impact on the 2017 Women's March. Connie Lim had suffered domestic violence, depression, anorexia, nightmares of sexual assault in Los Angeles as a teenager. The lyrics began to form in her head. One night she was at a small open mic session at a club in Los Angeles, and it was a very diverse group of listeners, and suddenly she realized she felt safe, and she just started telling what was coming up in her head. And then a couple years later, a woman who she wrote songs with, and she put together the lyrics of the song, and she was performing it around LA under the, her stage name of Milk, M-I-L-C-K. And she heard about the march in Washington being formed. And so she got together a choir in L.A., and she sent out word along the networks, was there a choir in L.A., in Washington, that would meet up with them? And she sent the music on ahead, and they all met up at the march. They sang the march. It was videoed by quite a few people and put up online, and suddenly it went viral. And this woman who had been speaking only for herself had this amazing experience of finding out that she was speaking for women all over the place who had felt all forms of abuse in their lives and had reached the point where they couldn't keep quiet any longer. The nationwide assault on women's control of their bodies, amplified by President Trump's ascendancy, is once more back in the news. Now, abortion is the current flashpoint, but it's only part of it. There are many forms of oppression and resistance gathering strength. It's time again for Quiet and many other protest songs to be heard and sung far and wide. And it's time for us to step up our activity as a freethinker space, a cradle, a workshop, and a guardian of values that make meaning of the sacrifices of those who've died trying to secure a brighter future for themselves and us. That's my prayer for us this Memorial Day. May it be so. Let's be an amen.